This spoiler-filled podcast is recorded live, unscripted, and intended for those over 18. Now prepare your ears for the audio stimulation they've been waiting for all day as we step into
the spoiler room.
And welcome back, my friends, to the podcast that never ends. I am your host, Mark the Movie Man. This is the Spoiler Room, and it is another 25th anniversary special. We're doing it a little early this month because of the holiday coming up next week and various other things. And today is a little bit different than the other 25th anniversary specials because, well, it was something that I noticed in 1990 when looking up the films to do this series is that there were a lot of sequels that were released, and I'm just talking about the wide release ones, which there were 15 of to the wide release alone, not to mention the direct-to-video sequels. And tonight, we're going to talk about some of those sequels. And in the house, first off, a steel horse he rides. He's wanted dead or alive. It's none other than Cole Meredith in the house. How are you, sir?
I'm great, man. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And right next to him, she's no alien to the sequels, far from it. It's the one and only diva of the Spoiler Room, Dawn. Hello, Dawn.
Hello, Mark. Hello, gentlemen.
Hi.
Hello, lady.
Hello, lady.
And next to her is a man with a little bit of magic and a whole lot of song and dance. It's the BFD himself, Mr. Glenn Bittner. Hello, Glenn.
Hello, Mark. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks. And next to him, well, we have an old priest, a young priest, and a bow tie. It is Paul Salzar. Hello, Paul.
Hello. I'm getting ready for a Wisconsin winter, so...
Oh, it's not quite here yet. It's going to snow. It hasn't snowed yet. So we're still good.
But unlike Game of Thrones, it actually does come to our state. So
that's true. Winter is coming.
Gore-Tex. Thank Gore-Tex.
And Gore-Tex, yes, the man himself. He's the maintenance man in your local sorority house. God help them. It's the one, the only, Scotty D. Hello, Scott.
Hi, I didn't drill any holes in any walls or anything, no.
I don't want to know about the holes that you drill in your walls, Scott. There's just something you shouldn't share for legal purposes. Anyway,
okay.
And I am wearing my mask made of human skin as we are talking tonight about the sequels of 1990. As I mentioned, there were many released because they were discovering, hey, it's not only Spielberg or Lucas that can do sequels, we can do sequels too. Whether that was a good or bad thing, we'll have you decide at the end of the show. First off, right away, we are going to go with Dawn's pick this evening. Go ahead, Dawn. Why don't you tell our fine listeners what film you chose to talk about?
Well, I wanted to talk about Predator 2. Quite an underrated sequel. Mostly because with the original Predator had Arnold Schwarzenegger in it, and everybody wanted to see Arnie come back. He actually was in talks to come back to this. Unfortunately, he was working on, Total Recall and Terminator 2. Gotta make some choices here, people. So, Predator 2, set in 1997 L.A., which is effectively a war zone, which is exacerbated by extreme global warming, and the heat is intense, as you can see on all the characters who are sweating profusely, as at least what that's supposed to represent. And interestingly, the movie you made in 1990, the whole concept of LA being a war zone was not that horribly unrealistic because 2 years later, the Rodney King incident, the LA riots, things were pretty tense back then. It was definitely heading there. So anyway, 1997, LA is a war zone and the Predators come and are drawn to that hunting ground and Danny Glover saves the day. Along with, you know, Bill Paxton and Gary Busey. Gary freaking Busey.
Yeah!
In his first role after his accident.
Yes.
You've got Ruben Blades. Love that guy. And Maria Conchita Alonso.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. And Robert Davi as the stereotypical angry boss.
Yeah.
Morton Downey Jr. doing his shtick.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I forgot that he was in there.
Yeah, there's some great people in this film. There really are.
It's like a dream cast of like mid-80s, early 90s pop culture and genre film B-players.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, them too? This is awesome!
Yeah. Yeah, there are a lot of people in this, and there's a lot of significance to this film, not only for the fact of that you had Danny Glover, it kind of expanded on the whole Predator story, but thanks to one scene in this, it launched a whole nother series, first in comics, and then eventually to the films, unfortunately. Predator 2, go ahead, Paul.
I loved it. I loved that they took it out of the basic the jungles, and then they brought it into the urban jungle setting. I thought that was a really clever thing. It was also neat to see Predator done a little bit differently. It was nice to see kind of like, oh, yeah, the Predators are just a bunch of, like, sports-going type hunters, you know? and you know, they're at their favorite hunting place, and they're, you know, hunting us down, unfortunately. But, it was a great sequel. I love the characters. You know, Bill Paxton is one of my favorite characters. I'm starting to get into Adam Baldwin a lot more now.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, this movie had a lot in it. And, of course, Gary frickin' Busey.
Gary frickin' Busey. Just totally off his rocker as the soldier who's sent to go after the Predator. Oh man. Cole, what'd you think of Predator 2 and especially Gary frickin' Busey?
It's an awesome film, man. It really is. It's a really unique sequel in that it took some sort of guts on somebody's part to go that direction. I mean, to move it from the jungle to the city, even though it was the same writers from the first film. I mean, somebody had to make a leap of faith. I don't know that much about the history of the film other than interviews with the director, Stephen Hopkins. I'm not sure how to pronounce his name, but I've read interviews with him and he was glad to make the film. He did a great job. He was fresh off Nightmare 5, which I'm sure was not a great experience. That film was incredibly rushed. And also, you know, just looking at the cast, I mean, they're aping a certain amount of the Lethal Weapon cast, which is coming from, if I'm right, a certain amount of the same producers from the Lethal Weapon series. I mean, you've got the boss, Martin and Ray's boss in here, as well as Danny Glover, as well as just, you know, a cast of characters from a lot of people who were in action movies of the same brand around this time. And there's a sense of camaraderie in this film, and it works because of that. I mean, the first movie was about just a tribe of soldiers, right? This movie is about like a handful of cops that have that same camaraderie. And you have the same actor playing Predator who does a phenomenal job. If you look at the Predator in these first two movies and then all the Predators after, I think there's a huge difference. And it's part of the reason I think these two movies stand out. Alan Silvestri's score, I think, is even better than what he did in the first film. Added this almost like a jungle. I've listened to that CD so much, I had to buy a second copy. as Don said, the cast is phenomenal. I did a fan poster about a month ago, 2 months ago, tried to fit all the names on the top. It was a lost cause. Like, I had to lose. This is a great film. I don't know what to say, man. I went through a period where I liked this more than the first. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the first is a better film, But I watched this one more, man. It's a lot of fun. Just a fun little tidbit. I heard from a gentleman who knows way more about film than I do that Steven Seagal was sought after for the lead in this role. And I actually laughed and thought, God, that's such a stupid film geek bit. And then I realized, well, he did March for Death right around this time.
Yeah.
So maybe there is some interesting backstory about Jamaican warlords in there and dueling studios that maybe Seagal really was eyed for this film. It would be worth researching. But I love Predator 2, man. Yeah. 4 out of 5 stars. I got to knock it down a star. it's the ending does get a little overwrought with Glover climbing up and down pipes and the Predator in this old woman's bathroom mixing up. It does get a little too comedic, but it's a great film.
Definitely. And Glenn, how do you feel about Predator 2? Anything to add about this interesting sequel?
I can see Bill Paxton die. I love watching Bill Paxton die. He does it so well.
And he's the only actor to be killed by both an alien and a predator. So,
and a Terminator.
And the Terminator.
Wow. Wow, man. My mind.
Aliens and robots, they freaking hate Bill Paxton. Bill Paxton.
Yep. Aliens are going to come to Earth and just be like, where's Bill Paxton?
And then Sean Bean's going to go, he's over in the corner. Then they'll kill Sean Bean, and then they'll go kill Bill Paxton. Anything to add your feelings on this? How did you feel about Predator 2, Glenn?
I like it, sort of. Mm-hmm. The whole, it's a big jump going from Arnold being special forces commando taking this one of these things out in the jungle to Danny Glover like boxing it to death pretty much. not as good as the original, I don't think, but mm-hmm. I still had fun with it. But I don't really go back and revisit it.
Sure.
Like I do with the original.
I will agree with that. I think among some of the other sequels that we'll talk about tonight, or some of the other sequels that had come out in 1990 or just prior, it was one of the more fun sequels, and it really felt like they were putting forth a lot of effort. And some of these sequels, I don't think they were. But this one... I agree with Don. I think it is a little underrated as far as how it was written and the chance they took with it. It is one of my favorite 1990 films.
I just wanted to point out, not as good as the original, and it is a leap to go from Arnold Schwarzenegger to Danny Glover, but did you guys catch the bit in there where they referred to an operation that Dutch was on and that he'd been killed? In action mm-hmm. by the Predator.
Yeah,
they had that in there because they had the image. That's when Gary frickin' Busey shows up.
Exactly.
They're showing the images.
Love that guy.
From the event that had happened. So, I like how they loose, they kind of still put it within the same world. Ha, they got to jump on you, MCU. Screw you guys. No, just kidding. but here it was a sequel, but not a sequel, but at least they still tied it a bit to the first one enough for you to go, yeah, okay. I think they did that well. What about you, Scott?
I think it was absolutely a sequel, a direct follow-up. Now, I will say that I have not watched either Predator film in several years. I need to revisit them both. I've got them both on Blu-ray here, but like everything else, it just kind of gets shelved until I get around to it. I've always loved this movie, Predator 2, which I didn't get to see in the theater because, it was R, and I was too young at the time, and no one would take me because they all suck. but not bitter. Anyway, I just immediately loved it. I mean, because I love that the original Predator, of course, it dealt with special forces people going in clandestine and hunting down these warlords, and then they find out that they're being hunted too by this other thing. And now you find out that there's like huntsmen and sportsmen in of intergalactic thing. So what happens when the jungle, the war zone, becomes our own populous American cities? And do you recall, I thought what a really ballsy thing what it did is that the predator didn't just kill indiscriminately.
Right.
Who did it go after? It went after everybody with a gun.
Yeah.
This was produced by Joel Silver, Mr. Guns Are Fantastic, and which actually a lot, which actually the Predator movies themselves said quite a few times. So to actually kind of make that distinction that all these people were so scared of everybody that they were carrying a gun, and that's what actually brought the Predator against them, this was kind of interesting to me. I thought that there were a lot of you know, they didn't have Arnold Schwarzenegger, which I think everybody considered a demerit at the time. I didn't really see it. I don't think that the same guy needs to fight the Predators every single time.
Word.
But, you know, Arnold was the ultimate superstar at the time, too. No one had ever seen anything like him. So, I mean, it was considered a demerit. It's like, wait a minute, we've gone from Arnold Schwarzenegger, the Terminator King shit of the world, all the way down to like Riggs's partner,
Murtaugh.
I liked him in this movie. I thought it was a great movie. I thought it was really. I thought they balanced some satire, like with the Morton Downey Jr. bit, with the action in a way that, say, like another sequel that came out in 1990, RoboCop 2, was completely unable to do. And I thought that it was a great job. There's lots of creepy bits to it. Like, I think I still get the creeps when the Predator is imitating the kid's voice. Want some candy? I mean, that's creepy, man. And it just completely one-upped it, where you're actually fighting on the ship. And, of course, you see those skulls on the wall, which was of course the thing that was
the whole Alien versus Predator
thing, which was good,
which
in
is
all
actually really good, which was a really good comic.
Yeah. I actually always wished that they did the Predator 3. If you recall, now guys, this is called the spoiler room for our listeners. Remember, so if you didn't want this spoiled, then. You know, here's your chance to turn off. But if you remember, at the end, the Predator shows that they have been to Earth many times by tossing him a gun, a musket, from like the 17 or 1800s.
I think the date on it is 1751 or something.
Oh, thank you, because I could not remember the date, honestly, to save my life. But I remember way back then thinking, wouldn't that be amazing? Because we're now they did the Predator sequel, Predator 2, which shows the Predators as they are going against a more technologically advanced foe. It's America in the future. The Predators show that, well, we actually have more tools than we've let you believe. You know, they can see not just the one vision; they can see many different kinds of vision. They have different weapons, so they kind of increase their. Wouldn't it be amazing when you just strip them, like, bare almost in, like, the 18th or 19th century and you're fighting against, you know, those kinds of people and, like, who would win in that situation? I always thought that that would make a fascinating Predator 3, which they never actually made. I remember thinking that way back, like, when I was, you know, 15 and just thinking, like, oh, shiny explosions, this movie's awesome. But, yeah, that's what I was doing.
Huh.
I thought this movie was a real, but I was kind of digressing there. But yeah, Predator 2 is a great movie.
Yes, it is, and I really appreciate it. It was one of my favorites. Don, did you have anything you wanted to add about Predator 2? Any special moment for you in it?
Nope, it's a solid film. It's a worthy film to talk about. It's not my favorite sequel from 1990, but it's one that definitely I think. Deserves to be talked about. That's all.
And it does. And I think people need to give it a look, even though it doesn't have Mr. Arnold Schwarzenegger. So I have a lot of fun with this. I like the voodoo angle. Once again, here we are, 1990, and we have yet another villain who is a voodoo guy. The whole voodoo Jamaican drug lord angle. So, you know, we saw it with Steve. Maybe that's why they wanted Steven Seagal, because he's familiar with the subject. He already did two films with it, so, hey, why not one more? So, excellent choice, though, Don. I definitely agree that it's one that should be on people's list. They should watch it, and it is a lot of fun, and it really did spark so much, such a great series of Dark Horse comics, and unfortunately, it also sparked a number of really bad live-action movies, but hey, you can't win them all, so... We're going to go, we're going to kind of jump here genres and go to Cole's pick here tonight, next, and talk about, well, go ahead, Cole, what did you want to bring to the table today?
Well, I picked my favorite, which is absolutely Young Guns 2 from 1990, which I suppose I would have been 12 years old when I first saw it on VHS, maybe 13, but... I really like this movie as like a haunting Western about regret and just the nature of what it is to realize that you have completely come to a dead end and gotten your friends killed. Now, I was studying Billy the Kid before I saw this film. Like, I watched the original Young Guns in 88. So I would have been 9 when I saw that, I guess, and immediately started, like, reading everything I could about him and just found it to be the history of Billy the Kid to be pretty fascinating in the sense that he is a legend that lives up to the legend. Mm-hmm. He is not just this brutal, cold-blooded killer, nor is he this misunderstood young man driven to murder by, you know, injustice. He's a combination of the two. And he is a true frontier immortal in the sense that he escaped miraculously more times than any other person you'll ever read about. I mean, if you read about Billy the Kid, really look into the facts. The shit he did, it just makes you smile. I mean, he was pretty outlandish. Anybody who says he's a coward hasn't done their research. Maybe a little crazy. But the circumstances he lived through were pretty phenomenal. Now, Young Guns 2 is about the later half of his life. In reality, probably the last quarter of his life. Young Guns 2 condenses the events that occurred over 2 years into what looks like a month or something. The movie begins in 1879, and Billy the Kid died in 1881. So you can understand the events were compressed. Also, Young Guns, the original Young Guns, used up a bunch of the finer, more well-known Billy the Kid moments. So Young Guns 2 had to create some action scenes to keep things going because the original had used those up. That being said, as I said, the movie to me is looked down upon probably because of its connection to the Brat Pack. And that title ties directly into Emilio Estevez because the reporter who gave them that title was invited out on a night with Emilio, who was way too trusting at his young age. And they were probably all snobby young kids. I guarantee I was worse than them, and I have neither money nor fame. I think young people act erratically, and the term the Brat Pack should not reflect negatively upon any film. And Young Guns specifically, and Young Guns 2 even more specifically, to me, is a bunch of young people doing their best work. The performances in this movie are incredible. I get the feeling for every character. The cinematography by Dean Semler, who also did Dances with Wolves, actually sandwiched in between the Young Guns movies, is amazing. And William Peterson does a really good Pat Garrett. I could go on and just eat up the entire show. But I think this is, gets an unfair rap as probably a pop culture film, a film that was made for young people at the time, and it was. But I think there's a lot about this film that really rocks. Also, Alan Silvestri, again, we were just talking about him. rocks the house here. I know the composer for the first Young Guns, all their work was, you know, gotten rid of like a week before the film opened. They did this traditional Western score. At the last minute, it was replaced with like a really funky golden child type of 80s score. And I think they hired Alan Silvestri to come in because he knew the terrain. He knew commercial scoring. So he kind of bridges the gap here. I love the score in this movie. It's haunting. It sends chills right up my spine. And on and on and on. I got to stop. I love Young Guns. I think it's a haunting Western. It's a badass Western. I don't understand any of the negative reviews. Anything the first film did wrong, this film remedies.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it's a solemn film. Oh, one last thing. That dance scene by Emilio Estevez after all of his friends have died. He's got one friend left who he doesn't know that well. He tries to give the one friend he has left a new name. And the one friend he has left says, no, I'm fine with my original name. Just great filmmaking. But after that, it's almost like Emilio Estevez realizes he's a ghost. Billy the Kid realizes he's a ghost. The scene is never talked about. They give Billy the Kid this bizarre dance montage around this, pinata? Is that what they're called?
Yeah, it's a pinata.
Bullets? I'm not part of the culture, but he dances like a figure eight around this pinata in this bizarre haunting sequence right before he's supposedly shot. To me, it's an interesting film. I love it.
Well, this was actually, it sparks because it opens, interestingly enough, with a supposedly true account of someone claiming to still be Billy the Kid, mm-hmm. who actually wasn't killed, because the movie opens with an old man talking to a reporter in the 50s, I think it was. Yep. Or,
and Grushy Bill Roberts, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the guy's claiming to be Billy the Kid. He's really, really old, and that's kind of what helped spark what starts that whole story in the sequel. And I kind of liked that they based it off of a true account of someone claiming that. You know, I thought that was an interesting jumping board for the sequel, considering how the first one ended. You're kind of like, okay, where are they going to go with it when you hear the sequel, besides that rockin' soundtrack by Mr. John Bon Jovi?
one song. He
is one song. The whole no, album, really.
He did
more than one.
Did he really? Because I always go back to the first thing. I think Blades of Glory is actually a good song, but I always go back to the Alan Silvestri score too. Because I first thing I think of is those people on horseback and hearing that bum 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 bum. That is a great score.
Yeah. I have the score, and I also have the CD, the entire album that was inspired by Young Guns 2, by Mr. Bon Jovi. It was released around the film. It was music from and inspired by, and from meaning that it played at the end credits.
Yeah. and inspired by means that the studio musicians saw a cactus one time.
That's a whole other rant there of what they do with soundtracks. Dawn, your feelings with Young Guns 2. You just recently watched this, didn't you?
I did. I just revisited it. You know, I was a teenage girl watching this movie. And revisiting it a decade or more later, I felt like a teenage girl watching this movie again. It was nice. It was nice. I was floored. Watching it again tonight, I was floored. All I could think of is, wow, the amount of talent that came together in this movie. God, why am I drunk? Viggo Mortensen's mm-hmm. character is so subdued, and his style is so subtle. That scene after Balthazar Getty, Tommy, gets shot, and Pat Garrett, William Peterson is there, and he's all emotional because he realized that they'd killed a child instead of Billy the Kid. And Viggo Mortensen's just kind of sitting there, and he's not bitter. He's not angry. He's just kind of, take your medicine, kid. This is the choice you made, and this is the consequences from it. There was no venom. It was just there, and that was his performance throughout. It was just outstanding, and among a myriad of outstanding performances.
Yeah. There's just a huge cast of characters in here of people, including, I believe, we have Kiefer Sutherland. He's in here as well, and we saw him in Flatliners. I mean, really, 1990 was interesting because we had multiple actors showing up across many films during the year.
Everybody was working, man.
Christian Slater did some of his best work in this one, I thought.
Yeah,
this is some of his best performance. I love him in Heather's. I am such a Heather fan.
Oh yeah, it's definitely
crazy.
But, I mean, I thought he was a great character here because he's not if you're not familiar with all the characters from Billy the Kid's background, he's not the character you expect him to be.
Exactly, man.
Yeah, and we don't get enough modern westerns, do we, Don?
Definitely not.
I mean, it's 1990, so you consider, well, it's 25 years old, but still, modern westerns are thin and hard to come by, and it's always fun when they do get them. It looks like a lot of people always seem to jump on board with them. I mean, you had this, you had Silverado, which was packed full of all kinds of talent, and that's a great western, too. You know, I mean, you get these, so you can tell there's still a draw to them. People still really enjoy them. Paul, how about your feelings with Young Guns 2? Any thoughts on it?
Other than what a lot of people have already stated, the scenery, the score, the acting is just fabulous. Normally, I don't like westerns because westerns aren't usually something that I enjoy watching. I enjoy reading more westerns than I actually do watching them. But this type of movie is up there with Tombstone for me. You know, it was exciting and I could get into it and had a nice plot. So definitely this is a really good Western that I can actually enjoy. So definitely a good pick.
Well, it's a dark film too, actually.
I remember at the time, all my friends were like, everybody saw it before I did because at the time I was always grounded. I was seen as being this problem child. But my friends would be like, dude, Chavez dies and Doc dies.
You're like, shut up!
But for me, even my sensibility at, you know, the age 11 was a little on the darker side. So I really dug that in. That's the way it was. Billy the Kid's friends died. In fact, Doc Scurlock dies in Young Guns 2, but that scene in which he dies, that was actually Charlie Bowdry. That was his best friend, you know. They took a little bit of poetic license because they killed Charlie Bowdry in the first film for dramatic purposes. But all that stuff is accurate. The emotion in this film is accurate. I think the screenwriter really wanted to show the effects of what Billy the Kid's life had led to and how young he died. I mean, 21 is young, and he was an educated young man. I mean, by all accounts, for the time, Billy the Kid was educated, so it is a tragedy, you know, that he ended up taking that road. To escape that many times?
Yeah.
He was smarter than a lot of people, man.
He was a smart guy in real life, and they seem to try to capture that spirit with both these films. Scott, how about you? Anything to add to what already has been said about Young Guns 2?
Well, I haven't really been able to play my cards too close to the vest here. I mean, obviously, I love this movie, too. Now, the first Young Guns, I had problems with. I mean, I think the first Young Guns is a good movie. Don't get me wrong. I've got that on blue and everything too. But I look at the first Young Guns. I was like, oh, it's a good movie. It could have been a great movie. That one was like about the Lincoln County War, and
it was the film itself was a little clunky too. I think
it was clunky. There was the soundtrack that Cole mentioned and stuff, which I liked the theme music, but I'm like, okay, after the theme music, they should have kind of. Let's go back a bit on that. You know, after that intro, you're like, great, now let's actually do a real movie. Okay, you're still doing that then. Oh, shit. now the one, of course, as if it was clunky, the one thing I took from the original movie was, holy cow, Emilio Estevez is incredible as Billy the Kid.
Yeah.
And this new movie comes in, and Cole said it perfectly when he said, whatever problems the first film had, this film remedies. That's completely true. It seems to have more scope. It seems to be telling a more serious story. It's not trying to say, like, well, we're trying to do a movie, but we're also trying to, you know, give, you know, the teenage girls a poster to put up on their wall as if that was... As if that's all that teenage girls or boys were looking for in a movie. It's a really great cast. It's a literate script. Geoff Murphy's first American film, I believe. And then he followed this up with a few years later with two great thrillers, Judgment Night. I still like Free Jack. I don't care what people say. I still like Free Jack. I still like Free Jack. I mean, Judgment Night, Free Jack, and Judgment Night was the last guy, Stephen Hopkins.
Yeah, Judgment Night, Stephen Hopkins, brother.
Okay, so I screwed that up. Okay, but he did Free Jack, and that was awesome.
I love it.
He also did a really good Western again when he did The Last Outlaw with Mickey Rourke.
Sure.
The performances are great. William Peterson starred in two of my favorite thrillers of the 80s, Manhunter and To Live and Die in L.A. So I stopped watching CSI when he left. You know, I think he's a great actor. There aren't too many actresses in Young Guns 2. I think Ginger Lynn's somewhere in there, but that's about it. It's a wonderful thing. I mean, I remember being interested in it beforehand because I had seen an Unsolved Mysteries that talked about Brushy Bill Roberts shortly before the movie came out. And I was like, oh, they're going that route. That's interesting. And I saw this, and I thought it basically told the story the way it was meant to be told. And, I mean, I was so inspired even that I think afterwards I had not done a lot of research on Billy the Kid beforehand, but I actually went out and bought the Pat Garrett book that he apparently wrote about Billy the Kid, which is really terribly written. It probably deserved to fail.
This movie mentions it's a horrible failure, the book.
It did. It said it was a total failure, and that's why I said, yeah, it probably deserved it. Because I read it, I'm like, yeah, this is really bad cowboy poetry, Pat. But I got really interested in it, and you kind of realize that whatever liberties the movies took, whatever figure Billy the Kid was he a psychopath? Was he tragic? Was he misled? What was he? You kind of realize that Emilio Estevez actually kind of gives you enough in his performance to cover all of the bases.
Yeah.
And you can read into it. And it's just it's a really well put together film. I second the thing about there not being enough Westerns. People have a prejudice against them. Hell, I did a Moviocrity on the movie Django from the 60s. It's still like the lowest rated episode ever because people just see a cowboy hat and they say, and moving on. So, I love Westerns, and I think Young Guns 2 is a really good one.
Yes, I definitely agree. Glenn, did you have anything to add real quick about Young Guns 2 at all? Did he leave us? He fell asleep, right?
Wait. Somehow my mic got muted. Sorry.
Hold your horses there, Mark.
And no one's responding to anything I say, and I thought you guys all just didn't like the fact that I don't like this movie.
Go, Glenn.
Because you've all gushed so much about it, and I shouldn't say I don't like it. I think it's just an average film. I wasn't a big fan of the original Young Guns.
Mm-hmm.
It just... I like... trying to think of the...
I don't buy
any of them mm-hmm. in their roles. Well, that's not true. I do buy Emilio Estevez as Billy the Kid.
Right.
The rest of them, I'm just like, eh... Maybe Lou Diamond Phillips. Is that his name? Yeah.
Yes.
But Charlie Sheen, glad he got caught. And all the other idiots, I don't even remember their names.
Wow.
That's how much Glenn cares.
Don't take this dude to the Breakfast Club, man. fuckers.
I mean, I think if you take Emilio Estevez out of this, it's a very subpar film.
Well, that is true, man, but he's really good.
The only thing I think that makes this film worth watching at all is his performance.
Well, he chews up every scene he's in. So
he does, but it wasn't enough for me to like the rest of the movie. I think part of it is because it's very rare that I like a Western that is a big group of guys. I tend to like the one, you know, I like my Clint Eastwood, you know, Man with No Name stuff, and I like my Unforgiven, where it's just, I guess it's kind of
a smaller group.
Loner, grittier, mm-hmm. Which is weird because I grew up on all the John Wayne stuff, which was so tame in comparison to you know, the more modern Westerns. You know, even though they'd shoot, you know, 100, you know, engines, there was never, it never even seemed violent. That's right, yeah, they just shot and wiped out an entire Native American village. Yeah, okay, whatever.
Well, there was usually
no big deal that.
There was more distance, though. I think that's what it is with the older Westerns. There's a little more distance between you and what's happening as far as the violence goes, nor is it presented in all its bloody glory, which
yeah.
Young Guns 2 had plenty of.
Yeah.
I'll also say that I think that something that, say, like the John Wayne Westerns would have in common with something like Unforgiven would be that there was a sense of internal drama and psychology going on there. You can see it in some scenes from Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, She Wore a Yellow Ribbon. There's a lot going on, usually going on within John Wayne's characters, just like there is with Clint Eastwood in Unforgiven, and it's kind of internalized.
Sure.
And there's not a lot. It's not quite so internalized in Young Guns 2. It's, you know, it's a big sweeping film. Mm-hmm. I can see that. I mean, if I'm not completely off base there.
No, you know, I think you're onto something there. So, definitely, go ahead.
I have to add too. I hate the whole peyote scene.
Oh yeah,
where you know, it's like, animal. You know, we'll just pretend. Well, no, the when they go to the village and it's like, we'll just pretend you're all crazy. I'm like, you know, you're acting as if none of these natives in this area know what the effects of peyote does. And you can't just, this is like saying, so we're going to smoke a bunch of pot to pretend we're crazy and then go to a Grateful Dead concert and they'll just think we're crazy, not that we're stoned. I'm like, really? Really? That's me being picky.
I always kind of took that. I mean, and this is just me. This is just me. I'm not saying anything's wrong or anything like that. I always took that as to mean that they just kind of like looked at them and just stared at them as they walked by. And they're kind of just giggling at the fact that nobody's doing anything, but they're walking through the spirit world as they believed that they're doing. And in a sense, it's because I think the people of the village know you're already dead. Your days are numbered.
The people in the village know exactly where they are, man.
Yeah, your days are numbered. You know, yeah. That kind of thing is what I took from it anyway. That's just, again, that's just me.
No, they were just upset that they hurled all over their sacred rocks. So, sorry. But no, Young Guns 2, excellent choice, Cole. Yeah, if you're a fan of the first one, you probably should check it out if you haven't already. And it has a lot of people who have been in movies that we covered in previous episodes of our 25th anniversary special. So let's move right along here to Glenn's pick. Glenn? Why don't you go ahead and tell us what film you brought to the table?
All right. So what happens when you take an incredibly arrogant Italian filmmaker who writes a script in broken English demanding that all the actors read it as written? All your lead actors weren't expecting to be lead actors. They showed up expecting to be extras, and you name it as a sequel to a movie that it is not even a sequel to. You get Troll 2.
Yeah.
Troll 2. Now, I have a fondness for the original Troll. I'm not saying it's a great movie, but I think it was somewhat imaginative. And it also gave us our first look at Harry Potter.
Yes.
because that was the name of the character in the original Troll. J.K. Rowling is nothing but a thief who stole everything she got from the original movie Troll. not true at all, but I'm just going with other things that people have said about, it's just a copy of... No, it's not. But yeah, you got this great story of a family that vacations in the town of Nilbog, which, it's goblin spelled backwards! That's the kingdom! You get such horrible acting in this. There is the one scene which... Man, I would love to have that many views on any video I've ever done. It has millions of views where it's just the guy going, they're eating her! And then they're going to eat me! Oh my god!
That guy friended me on MySpace back away.
I don't blame them. Like I said, these are people expected to be extras, you know, most of them. These were not like people, you know, who had like tons of acting experience who showed up thinking, I'll be a lead actor. But you also get great lines because the dialogue is written so poorly. You can't piss on hospitality. I won't allow it. It's just such an... I mean, the costuming is bad, and the whole concept that the trolls, which they aren't trolls, they're goblins, which you call a troll too, which trying to capitalize on the small success of a troll, which I really don't understand. it's like, yeah, we're just going to copy something that was marginally successful and make a worse version that has nothing to do with the original. And the concept that you have these goblins, which are apparently all vegetarian, but they're vegetarian by turning people into plant-like material. So I'm like, is that really doesn't sound... You're... What? What? Ah, just such an awful, awful movie. But it's a train wreck that when you watch it, you have to watch it. Every time I run across this, when it's playing on something, usually some internet... thing where I'm flipping through, like, you know, some of the horror host type stuff, and I'll see it. I have to stop what I'm doing. I have to watch this awful, awful, awful movie.
you just can't help it. It sucks you in by its awfulness. Yeah, Paul, do you enjoy this horrible, horrible film?
No, I got the mic problem.
It killed him.
The troll killed
my mic.
Actually, it was probably Claudio Fragasso, the director, who gets pissed whenever anyone badmouths this film.
I know.
But including the actors. He, like, heckled them during the Q&A because they kicked him out of the room.
But that's the thing that I would say about this movie, though, is although it isn't a very good film, the passion behind it, all the people that were involved in the film loved trying to make the film. Now, since then, a few of them have not wanted to even be mentioned in the same breath as this film. But especially the director, I remember him giving a discussion about it, and they had this kind of documentary about the Troll 2 and bringing them all together for a reunion. And he was so passionate about that film. He truly loved and liked what he made. And for that, I give a lot of extra credit for this film. Even though this is a film that you probably you'd sit and you would mock and you would have fun with and you wouldn't take seriously, I enjoy movies that I can take seriously. But that's why I'm not a fan of the sci-fi shark movies because... I get the wrong mentality, but when I sit down and I watch a film like this with the correct mentality behind it, I do kind of have a good time, if that's possible. Mm-hmm. This film is great in its badness, I guess is probably the best way to describe it.
I mean, I think this film is the – if it – you looked in the dictionary of films so bad they're good. Mm-hmm. It says see Troll 2. And Dawn and I have had this discussion many times, and I think we even had, you know, it's been a topic on a few other, on another podcast. Astro Radio Z talked about it. I think we talked about it too. Favorite, you know, not so good films. So bad it's good films. This is actually what you want your so bad it's good film to be, not what the modern definition is. Wouldn't you say, Dawn? We've had that discussion many times.
Oh, yes, we've had that discussion. but I haven't seen this film.
Troll 2?
Correct.
Oh, wow.
I need to, but I have not seen this film.
Either in for a torture or a treat.
I fully expect it to be a treat. This sounds like it's one perfectly of the, up my alley.
That's the thing. It's kind of a passage of, you know, that you can, if you watch this movie, it's kind of like the rite of passage, you know, your coming of age type of thing for like a reviewer, I guess.
So, this is.
I think we need to have a live tweet party viewing.
We might have to try to schedule that. We'll figure how to do the logistics.
Just do a hangout and a live run through.
We all start troll at the same time. Troll two at the same time.
Let's get the director involved too.
Yeah, he's gonna curse at us in Italian.
You made a comment about passion, which
he is passionate about this film.
And the thing is, I can accept passion, but. Yeah. He in no way thinks anything is wrong or could have been done better with this movie.
Yeah, so I wouldn't really call it.
There's passion and there's blind zealotry.
Arrogance, yes.
So yeah, I mean that. Man, yeah, just I mean, just the fact that he demanded that when the actor said, you know. We could ad-lib some of the dialogues, which doesn't sound like it was written by someone who doesn't speak English, which he didn't.
With his vision.
That it is his vision, and at least you know what you got on screen is what the director wanted.
It's his fault.
Director, Cole, speaking of directors, Cole, what do you think of Troll 2?
Well, oh my God! Well, I love Glenn, first of all, and I think Glenn's the B movie bunker rocks.
I know there's a lot of preface here, is what I'm saying.
No, I just say, man, fuck. The original Troll is one of my favorite films of all time, and I refuse to get caught up in this phony fucking The Troll 2 is so bad, it deserves to be recognized hype. Because The Troll 2 is bad. I mean, who cares? We don't even have a decent, like, special edition of the original Troll, which is a great film by my estimation. I mean, I love the original Troll. I would put it next to, like, The Neverending Story in terms of weird goblin effects done practically before CGI. There's a whole musical sequence in the original Troll done with puppets where they're singing like the lead theme song from The Omen. Great stuff. I mean, great goofy stuff, all directed by Beekler, who is a great practical effects guy. This Troll too, man. I mean... So Conan suddenly advertises it and everybody gets their panties in a bunch?
Did he?
I'm trying to remember where the Troll 2 craze started. I'm pretty sure it was Conan who was like, has everybody seen Troll 2? It's terrible. I don't know. I don't like it. I think it's a mediocre film. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe if it had been called Goblin and earned this reputation as being such an awful film... I don't know. I think about, like, everybody involved with the first movie. I feel like it's kind of sad. I feel like it's kind of a sad story.
Sure.
That the original Troll is overshadowed by the legacy of the Troll 2. And more adequately, by the legacy of the Troll 2 documentary, which has become bigger than the actual Troll 2 movie. In any case, it is an awful film. It is hilariously awful. Mm-hmm. I know because it's unfortunately attached to my original Troll DVD. That's the only way.
Really?
Yes! Yes!
How the... What?
I am like in the eighth circle of hell as a Troll fan, I swear to God. No, I'm kidding. I think Glenn is right. I am just trying to make the show fun. But Glenn is right. This is a great film because you can laugh at it's awful, you know, and it's hilarious. And I mean that. I mean, it is a hilariously bad film. I wish they just called it Goblin and released it. You know, it would have been great. But... unfortunately, it's attached to what I consider as a wonderful, dark fairy tale. Almost like a weird film, like, do I want to show my kid this or not type of movie? Like a really weird movie, and it just kind of cheapens it. But it is hilarious.
It is. It is. It is bad, and it's... this is a film that all these modern filmmakers who tried to make so bad it's good films wish they could make a film like this, because I think this goes along the lines of just a few of the others. I mean, this is above The Room as far as just how pure and, you know, the director, as it's been mentioned, his vision, he thinks he's just made the best thing ever, and it's not. Scott, anything to add about Troll 2?
He does that, though. He does that. Claudio Fragrazzo, I remember when I was watching the documentary Best Worst Movie, which is just a great documentary, when they said, yeah, we're going to bring in Claudio Fragrazzo, I just immediately was like, oh, don't. Because I remember reading interviews with this guy back in, like, Fangoria, because he has written... and directed a number of, like, Italian horror films, most of which are really awful. You know, he did, you know, like, I think he was involved with, like, a lot of the Bruno Mattei films, for instance. And he's very arrogant. He does not like you telling him that any of his movies aren't great. And if they aren't great, it's somebody else's fault. He's that type of guy. But, boy, where do I go back with Troll 2? Well... way back, because I used to go into the video store when everybody else was having fun on the weekends. I'd go into the video store and pick out my movies for the weekend, and I would actually pick the exploitation films before picking the big films. And I was a big fan of, like, anything fantasy or anything oriented like that. I knew who Charles Band was, I knew who Roger Corman was, I knew all those people. And so I see in Video Update in Stillwater, Minnesota, I see Troll 2 has just come out on VHS that week. And I right away, I snapped it. I'm like, Troll 2, rock on, I love Troll. Because that's the kind of dude I was. I liked Troll a lot. And pop it in, and it was just when I was starting to write notes about my movies, just in case I ever decided to start writing about them. And you just see these, like, horrible, like, scrawlings of, what the hell am I watching? Wait, bring up lines of dialogue, and finally, like, it's going sheet after sheet after sheet, just reprinting the dialogue, like, and saying, this is one of the worst films I've ever seen. And it really was. I think at the time I said it was the second worst film I'd seen, aside from the movie Bloodhook, which was the worst I'd seen at that point. Look that one up. With MST3K alum and everything involved in that one, it's a piece of shit. Troll 2 is just this train wreck of a movie for all the reasons that have been said. Awful dialogue, awful costumes, awful plot. Even the horrible twist of the Nilbog is Goblin spelled backwards. That's ripped off from fucking Howling 3, and it wasn't even good there. Everything is just terror. I actually liked that Best Worst Movie documentary because it kind of showed the people that have built up around it. It's not a film you love because it's good. It's a film you love because it's not good. And when you find out what an asshole Claudio Fragrazzo can be, you can be like, I can feel good about hating this movie. with a good news and bad news thing for Cole here, Troll is coming on Blu-ray very shortly. And it is coming out with extras, special features. Yes.
What?
Yes.
No!
But here's the thing. There's a good news and bad news. Now, the bad news is that once again, it's a double feature with Troll 2.
No!
But it does have, Scream Factory is putting it out. It's going to have a making of Troll, either
yes!
or documentary, plus a trailer and behind-the-scenes stills. That's on Troll, and then Troll 2 will have a commentary and trailer, and the first 5,000 copies of the Blu-ray will also have Best Worst Movie. So each film gets extras. And
it will also have the never-before-seen recorded Troll music video done by Sonny Bono. No, it won't.
You had me going there just for a minute, Glenn. My brain is sitting here going,
I got you, Troll.
Wait. Oh, no. No, Glenn is just pulling my leg.
All those things are coming out. But so I was like one of the first people to see Troll 2. I was one of the first people to hate Troll 2. I still hate Troll 2, but I also love it. And
and it's a consensus, I think, with a number of people on this film.
And it's also worth noting that the costumes in this film, and in a few other films, I always find if you want to show how ridiculous and maybe oddly topsy-turvy Troll 2 is, you just have to know that the costumes, as bad as they are all done by Laura Gemser, who is known as the Emmanuel from the cheap knockoffs of the 70s. So the costumes are designed by someone who was famous for not wearing anything. And that, I think, sums it up, really.
That pretty much sums it up. So Troll 2, you've heard it here, folks. No, it is not exaggerated at how bad it is.
And I should mention that I was saying this all while drinking a cup of coffee, the devil's drink.
The devil's drink. Yeah, so Troll 2, we aren't exaggerating. This film is bad, but it is one of the true so bad it's good films. You just can't help but laugh at it, at how awful it is, and just, you know, how purely pure its awfulness is. So check it out. Troll 2, excellent choice, Glenn. 25 years old, amazing, and that film is still bad.
And this will conclude part one of our special two-part 25th anniversary special, The Sequels of 1990. Hope you've enjoyed it so far, and make sure you check out part two, where the discussion gets even more fun. Also, check out our other segments on iTunes and at specialmarkproductions.com.